Amen. Amen. Today is a special day for you, and as I said, I'm not an expert on it. I can't definitively speak to this point, because while I may do some of the tasks of a mother, do dishes and laundry and cook at times, I will never have that role. I won't ever be a mother. So I can only speak from observation some of those things that I have seen. But I'm going to go out on a limb here and suggest that nothing about being a mother is normal. Maybe the only thing that is normal about motherhood is that it's not normal. Oh, yes, there are routine things that you do. There are the daily tasks that you engage in, like cooking meals and planning for events and coordinating activities if you still have kids at home to make sure that they get to the right places at the right time, on time. You still do laundry. You still do all the things that that are required on a daily basis. But there really isn't anything about being normal. You have a lot of responsibilities and challenges that hold such an esteemed office. Regardless of how old your children are, it seems like no matter how old they are, you're still raising them. You're still offering advice. You're still giving them some counsel. You're still cooking for them. You're still doing laundry for them on occasion, and those tasks just never seem to end. I've not been privy to such conversations in the past, but I hear tell of such events where weary moms get together and they confer with one another some of the things that they have been going through. And so over a cup of coffee and a few ginger snaps, they share their stories. Conversation is often encouraging, but it is never condescending. These weekly sessions are not unlike the war rooms where generals get together and have battle strategies about what to do. You talk about things like potty training and getting kids to clean up messy rooms and curfew times for teenagers. And you pass on the latest news about some product that you think is the greatest, or some tidbit, some idea that's supposed to be the next best thing to sliced bread. All of that in the course of conversation, you know, to do that weekly. I think not so much to get advice, but just to have a listening ear and a compassionate heart. As they share their experiences, the others nod their head with both understanding and agreement. While their experiences may not be the same, they know exactly what you're going through. But they listen nonetheless to those stories of exhaustion and exasperation about your efforts at child rearing, but rather their hearts are filled resonating in compassion and empathy for some of the turbulent events expressed by those who are comrades in arms. And so while those experiences shared may not be exactly the same, they have had similar encounters. Nothing normal, but still needing encouragement. Maybe, just maybe, your experience as a mother might be similar to that of Mrs. Monroe, who lives in Darlington, Maryland. The mother of eight, she would consider herself like most mothers across America. A few interesting experiences, but very similar nonetheless to just the routine of daily events. After spending an afternoon grocery shopping, that would take an afternoon when you're trying to feed eight kids, she opened the door laden with bags of groceries. Everything in the home looked pretty much the same as when she had left it, with the exception that it was relatively quiet. Looking in the living room, five of her children were huddled in a small circle, exceedingly quiet, doing something with something in the middle of this tiny circle from which her vision was shielded. So she went into the kitchen, put her groceries down, and came into the living room to see what these five children were doing. And what she saw horrified her. Now you're going to wonder, aren't you? Well, as she peered over the shoulders of these little ones, there in the middle of these five kids, the children were playing with five of the cutest little baby skunks. Instantly terrified, she yelled at her children to run. Obedient as they were, each child did exactly as they were told, each in different directions, but not after, first of all, grabbing one of the skunks. Mothers, lock your doors if you still have kids at home. This only made the mother scream even louder and more frantically. It so scared the children that they squeezed the skunks. Now, the author of the newspaper article who wrote about this incident made a very important fact. Skunks don't like to be squeezed. Well, I don't think anything about motherhood is normal. You might readily agree that with everything we put mothers through, they should automatically be bestowed with some great honor, a Purple Heart, the Congressional Medal of Honor, something that is synonymous with all the things that they do. They deserve a lot more credit than we often give them. But for all they do and all that we have put them through, no one deserves a special day all to herself more than moms. Now, I'm not going to ask by show of hands how many are having to cook their own Mother's Day dinner, but we need to do a lot for them. A cartoon showed a psychologist talking to his patient, and he said, let's see, you spend 50% of your time and energy on your job, 50% of your energy on your husband, and 50% on your children. I think I know where the problem is. If you want to take away from the message this morning something from which you can make application for, this is what I would suggest. That you go home and get out a piece of paper and a pencil and you write down 31 things for which you are grateful for what your mom does but never have thanked her for. And then on one day of each day of the month, share one of those things with her. And honey, I've started my list. If you are in the regular habit of buying gifts, I want to offer some suggestions from experts about what not to buy. But you need to know, ladies, that it is a very stressful time for husbands to go out and shop. We have spent endless hours pacing up and down shopping mall aisles trying to pick out the right size, the right color, the right accent, the right gift. And we nervously sweat over asking the clerk if she thinks you'll like it. Experts say that you should never buy anything that plugs in. Although, now it wasn't for Mother's Day, but one year for Christmas, Robin wanted a Sawzall. That's what she got. I love that gift. Don't buy clothes that involve sizes. You're bound to get it wrong. She may ask why you think she wears that size or tell you she hasn't worn that size in 20 years. But never, never say that it looked really good on the model. You need to avoid things that are useful. Just because they advertise it on TV as saving hundreds of hours is not going to win you brownie points in the long run. Jewelry is on that list of, as well as to what not to buy your wife or mother. The jewelry she wants, you can't afford. And the jewelry you can afford, she doesn't want. And then lastly, they suggest that don't spend too much. She may wonder how in the world you're going to afford it. But then, don't spend too little because she might wonder if you only think that she's not worth that much. So we are just in a pickle, guys. Mothers are as unique as the flowers that God has adorned the earth with. Both bring beauty and grace to any setting. Their hugs mend broken hearts. Their kisses cure skinned knees. Their words comfort and encourage any failed attempt at kicking the winning goal, missing that one letter in the spelling bee competition, or getting cut from the squad. Their hearts absorb our pain. Their hands carefully guide. Their arms comfortably hold. Their lips compassionately speak. With that said, I'm all too keenly aware that for some, motherhood was an accident. It's not always a welcome one, but we need to remember that no accidents are God's. For others, biological motherhood is not possible. For still others, the mother was not always nice. For some, the road is not lined with roses, but rather only with thorns. It's a steep mountain or a very deep pit. Some have the heartache of watching and praying for a wayward child. Others have to fill the void of an absent husband who has left the family, mentally or physically. Joy and sorrow seem to run together. Many of us only have memories of our mothers who have left this life. It may have been a long time ago or just very recently. Those memories include a fading photograph or a letter that was written long ago. They may be words of a song or the half-empty bottle of perfume that sits on your dresser. Memories may be the favorite recipe that you now fix for some special holiday meals, or the dates on the calendar of some annual event that you used to share. Our hearts go to those, and we lift them up before the throne. Whatever your experience as a mother, you are to be commended and encouraged. But while we honor mothers today, and I would invite you to take your Bibles and turn to Proverbs 31. While we honor mothers today, it is my desire that each of us be challenged in some way from this passage, because there is a lot to grasp, whether male or female, whether young or old, whether mother or not. This passage compels us to consider how wisdom plays an important role in our life, in our conduct, in who we are and what we do. As we consider this passage, there are three points I'd like to have us. That is not working. Well, we are not going to worry about PowerPoint. Three points from this passage. At first, she is a valuable wife. The second is that she is a vigorous worker. And the third is that she is a virtuous woman. So from Proverbs 31, we want to begin at verse 10. And reading verses 10, 11, and 12, we want to see that she is a valuable wife. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. If you were reading this text in the Hebrew, you would notice something that is significant or important. Each of these characteristics, as they go through it, begins with a letter of the alphabet, the Hebrew alphabet. So there are 22 different character traits or ideas that the author is wanting to convey about this virtuous woman, about this woman of ideal. So you might say that it is the A to Z of character traits that ought to be embodied in a woman, and really for any of us. They ought to be traits that we take on as ourselves and conduct ourselves in this world. So you would notice that. They're essential attributes of any godly person. As it is the last chapter of Proverbs, I also see this passage as the summation of all that Solomon in his wisdom has compiled in passing out to his son and those who have written these Proverbs. Just a collection of, in summarizing all the things that Proverbs teaches. It teaches about godly living, godly character. It teaches about wise counsel. It teaches about being able to live within your means, about diligent work. It teaches so many things through the entire book of Proverbs, and it is summed up in this final section of chapter 31. The message of wisdom is captured in these verses for us, and it's personified in the excellent woman that's spoken about here. So she is a valuable wife, and as we look at this, verse 10 speaks about the fact that she is a treasured wife, a wife of noble character. Who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. The text begins with a mysterious but an insightful question. Who can find a wife of noble character? Does any such person exist? We might take it to mean that kind of a question. If we were to search the whole planet, if we were to search the whole time in which people populated the world, would we be able to find such a woman? Sometimes you hear in the news the top 10 places in America to retire, or the city where somewhere in the world where the longest life expectancy is. And so you wonder, is there such a place in the world where there's a group of women who exhibit this character of being noble? If so, it's the best kept secret place in the whole world, isn't it? So he's asking this question. But the question does not imply that such a person does not exist. But rather, as you read the context of the passage, it means that when such a person is found, she should be admired, honored, and valued because of how rare and beautiful she is. We see, first of all, that this person has noble character. Who can find such a person with noble character? Now, it does not refer to someone who is born into royalty. We might think of that as being noble. But it's not speaking about someone who has been born into that position or lot in life. The word literally means a person of strength, and here refers to the distinct godly character or qualities that she displays. Boaz, if you remember back in the story of Ruth, chapter 3 and verse 11, Boaz is speaking to Ruth, and he's describing her as a woman of noble character. In Proverbs 12 and verse 4, it says that a wife with such noble character is a crown on the head of her husband, meaning that she brings him honor and joy. Without such qualities, she is like decay in his bones, that verse speaks about. A friend of mine was married to a woman who was at times an embarrassment in public. Her actions brought him disgrace and sadness. You could see the great toil it took on him emotionally and physically. And in the translation of the New Living Translation Bible, it says that it says it best that such a woman saps his strength. The weariness to the bones. This woman who has noble character is a crown to the head of her husband. One who is not morally strong but brings disgrace. This woman of noble character has taken God's measuring stick and set her sights on achieving His standards of being a woman of godly character. The godly qualities that she has clothed herself in are valuable. Her worth is greater worth than that of the rarest and most precious jewels, as it's noted in verse 10. How much, then, do we place value on our character? Is it something that is rare to us to excel, to desire to have godliness as a part of who we are? Are you a wife, a woman of noble character, or do you sap the strength of your husband? For that matter, for any of us, which attribute is it that we aspire to? Are we upright? or are we unpleasant? This woman makes the right choices, even though the right choices are difficult to make. She has a godly quality about her that aspires to continue that and to maintain it, and decisions are going to reflect her moral principles. She's upright and honest, not willing to compromise her position when biblical principles are in question. It may not be the popular position, but then again, no one ever said that it was easy making the right decisions. Live with integrity. Be a woman of noble character. Because of her integrity, she is both rare and precious. So she not only is a treasured wife, she's rare, she's priceless, but we also see in this passage that she is a trusted wife. Reading again verses 11 and 12. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. Because of the kind of integrity that she has built into her life, the godliness for which she lives and aspires to, her husband is able to trust her. Her husband is able to give over to her the management of all the things that are taking place in the home. He has full confidence in whatever she does because she is a woman of virtue. We think about in the Old Testament the example of Joseph, who was given full confidence of Potiphar when he had a management of all the household. And it says that Potiphar knew only the things that were placed on his table to eat. Everything else was placed in the hands of Joseph. That's the kind of integrity, that's the kind of trust that the husband here has placed in his wife. She does so in such a way that her management enhances the wealth of the household. And the passage notes that as a result of her careful management, he lacks nothing of value for himself. His home is well taken care of. They have the things that they need to sustain their life. And it's because of her hand watching over that. Mom and Dad were married for 53 years. In that time, my dad only wrote two checks. One of them was when my brother and I were born, he had to pay the hospital to discharge us. I'm sure there are days when he wonders why he wrote that check. He had complete trust in my mom to manage the finances for our family. To be able to know that when he came home at night, things were going to be taken care of. Bills were paid. Food was on the table. The kids were clothed. Gas was in the tank. Insurance was taken care of. All the things were just handed over to her. And she took care of them for those 53 years. I'll come to that later on, but there were other things that she did, even in her illness, prior to her passing away, that she did to manage the household finances. Notice the response in return. It says that her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. The New Living Translation says she will not hinder him but help him all her life. Men, our complete trust in them elicits a response from them. They treat us well. They treat us well. It literally means that she helps advance us. In a word, she makes us look good. You have heard the adage and from the proverb, the saying that says that behind every good man is a good woman. That's what it's referring to here. Our reputation isn't necessarily based on who we are or what we do. A lot of it depends on our wives who promote us, and that's what it's saying. Our good, how we are seen by others, is directly attributed to her. So ladies, you can make us look good or you can make us look really bad. You need to be careful about how you portray your husband. A wife who is trusted by her husband will in turn support and encourage her husband in what he does. And notice that the text says that she does this all the days of her life. It's not just for a period of time. It's not just to get him through some difficulty at work. It's all the days of her life she is promoting his well-being. She encourages our work. It was when I was uncertain about what to do in my own career, if you will, that Robin said, you know what, you need to pursue pastoral care. And so that led me to get involved in hospice. And eventually that led me to be able to be here. It was because of Robin, her encouragement, that was able to help me advance to where I am at, for which I am grateful. So here's a question for all of us. It comes out of this passage. Are we trustworthy? Are we trustworthy? Do we encourage others in their tasks to do their best and to be their best? That might be a good question to ask those in our family. A wife who is trusted and treasured is valuable. She is rare and she is priceless. But notice in the next section, verses 13 through 27, that she is a vigorous worker. She is a vigorous worker. First of all, I want to see in part of the passage that she is an industrious worker. Read with me, if you will, verses 13, beginning at 13 and going down through verse 19. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it is still dark. She provides her food for her family and portions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it out of her earnings. She plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. And then drop down to verse 21. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Joyce, if I can use a word that you share with me quite often, she turns the world upside down. She's a vigorous worker, industrious. I don't know about you, but just reading that makes me tired. I want to take a nap. But you mothers, you women, you are about these tasks daily. Never idle, she works vigorously to tend to the needs of others. Hers is a self-sacrificing love affair with her husband and her family to ensure that her needs are met. She does not work to advance her own reputation. She doesn't promote herself or seek the accolades of others. Hers are the hands of quiet but steady work. Eager hands, if you look down into verse 16, when it speaks about having eager hands, it suggests that what she does brings joy and satisfaction to her. They're not a duty or a chore. They're not an obligation. They're something that delights her. She has eager hands to do it. She sets about it. She doesn't look at her list and wonder, well, what in the world do I want to do next? And I just can't think of even picking one. She sets about doing it eagerly. When I got my high school varsity jacket, that was a pretty big day. And I brought it home proudly, jacket in one hand, patches in the other hand. And I handed them to my mom. Can you sew these on for me? It happened to be a Friday, and it happened to be a ladies' retreat. And it happened that my mom was a dorm hostess, so that when ladies came in, she would help them get settled. She had a lot of responsibility. But nonetheless, she knew how important that was to me. And so as she was hostessing, she was sewing on varsity letters, sleeves with leather and very thick. And it was laboring. But she did it because she loved me. She did it for my brother as well, because there were two of us who got varsity jackets on the same day. Up at 5 to get to camp, in the kitchen by 6:30. She was the first to arrive to turn on ovens and start the day. The morning was busy cleaning up breakfast for 150 and then getting ready for lunch. A short break came in the afternoon where she would go home, throw in a load of laundry, pay a few bills, write a letter to a friend, and then return to the kitchen by 4:30 to begin dinner preparation. And then after all of that was done, to clean up and prepare for the next day and be home by 7 or 7:30. Throughout the day, every day, she would have a little chorus that she would sing or hum. And as I remember, it was never the same chorus 2 days in a row. What she did was long hours, hot days in a kitchen. But yet it was a joy to her to serve. She was a woman who aspired to have a godly character, and through her godly character, it came out in her work. This proverbial woman works well with her hands and then does her best to be a wise shopper as we read through this. Speaks about a merchant, that she's like a merchant ship. And merchants would go to all these different ports and they would look at different merchandise and find the best quality and for the best price and value. And so she is like the merchant who goes, and she is a wise shopper. Even when my mom was sick, she would sit my brother down next to the bed, and when she was, when my brother was there helping to do things around the house for them, and together they would go through the shopping circulars. There were some great stores in Fairview and Mayo, two, to grocery shop. And yet she would look through the circulars and she would look at her coupons and she would write down exactly what he was supposed to get and use this coupon for this and this coupon for that and shop here for this and shop here for that. And even until near the end of her life, that's what she was doing. She was a wise shopper. She looked for the best value because she wanted to make sure that the dollar stretched as far as it could. Our proverbial woman is always looking for the best value. Her shopping is careful and calculated. What she does is not a chore. It's not an obligation. It brings her delight and pleasure to see her family being well cared for. Verse 14, if you back up there, because it suggests that she's not in a rut. That she's like a merchant ship that goes afar speaks to the fact that she's willing to consider other things. As I told the guys, she's not just always making mac and cheese with hot dogs for dinner. She has variety. She's looking for new things that might be of value and interest and caring for the family. Knowing that the responsibilities are many, she rises early before everyone else in order to prepare. Not only, as you read the text, not only for her family, but for the servants. Now, wasn't the servants the ones who were paid to take care of you? But here we find that she is rising up early to prepare for them and to provide for the servants as well. The old adage is correct that says a man may work from sun to sun, but a woman's work is never done. She is not lazy. As a matter of fact, we see that from the profits that she has made from her savings, it tells about the fact that she has gone out, she has considered a field, and she has purchased it, and then she has planted a vineyard. So she has respect among the community because in that era, women didn't make contracts like purchasing property. That was left to the men. But because of her reputation within the community where she lived, she had the ability to go among the others and to consider what would be a good plot of land to plant a vineyard. And then it says that she goes and she plants it. And if you know anything about vineyards, they take time and they take energy and effort to prune and cultivate and to harvest. She is an industrious woman. She is not lazy. Verse 18 speaks of the profitable trading, meaning that she is planning for the future. Not only did she start her day early, but it ended late. And then when a passage speaks about a lamp going out, as it does there in verse 18, you remember back in the story that Jesus told about the 10 virgins, 5 who were prepared and 5 who weren't, and their lamps went out, and it meant disaster for them. When it's speaking about the fact here that her lamp doesn't go out, it's speaking to the fact that she's avoiding calamity because she's preparing for the future. And cold weather wasn't a concern for her because she made clothes of scarlet, verse 21. Scarlet in that day was something that was valuable. It was costly. And so what it's suggesting here in this verse is that she didn't spare any expense to make sure that her family were well taken care of in those cold winter months. Clothes weren't threadbare. Feet weren't without coverings and so on. She took care of them. Her family is her greatest priority, and her service to them was her greatest privilege. Her family is her greatest priority, and her service to them was her greatest privilege. But if it weren't enough for all that she has done for her family, notice in verse 20, not only was she industrious, but she also was an involved worker. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. She not only considers the needs of her family to take care of them, but she has enough time somewhere in the day to go out and to look at those who have need. I think it is often the tender heart of a woman who reaches out compassionately to the needs of the orphans and the homeless and those who have some specific need and reaches out to help them. Her eyes were always on the needs of others. But I want to suggest something to you that is evident in the passage that I need to remind us of, and that is we should never neglect our family in taking care of others. Our family needs to be the primary focus. And so she has learned balance. She has learned and has the capacity to manage the needs of her home, but also to help with the needs of others. And I think that speaks of the trust, going back to verse 10 and 11, that the husband had in his wife. The proverbial woman is a worker who is involved. And then notice in verses 23 to 27 that she is an inspirational worker. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes a seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. She is an inspirational worker. Because of the kind of woman she is, her husband is well respected in the city. Finding him at the city gate means that he had a place of prominence within the community. He was a leader. The city gate was viewed as the city hall, if you will, for today. It was there that community issues were addressed. It was there that decisions were made by the leaders among the community in the city. It was there that judicial actions were taken place if there was a lawsuit brought against someone. It was there that all these things took place. And it is there that we find this husband seated among the leaders because he is well respected. On account of her virtue and her work ethic, he is elevated to a place of respect in the community. She honors him rather than degrades him. She does not ridicule him in public, but offers support and encouragement. She respects him because he himself is a person who is respected. He is a person of respect. She brings harmony and unity to the home and to the community through her husband. And it's because of her that he is there. She inspires quality work. We notice in verse 24 that she makes linen garments and sells them. Linen was a valuable commodity in that day, and it was a commodity that was sold to the rich. And the value and quality of work that she did was seen by merchants who would purchase her materials and send them around the, the, the vast area to be sold. Merchants would travel all over to buy her garments. They were superior in quality. And it didn't matter what price she set, because a merchant was willing to pay it because of how valuable and priceless they were. But her inspiration didn't end at the city gates. We see that she also taught. She taught those in her home, her children and her servants. So she was involved in their lives in a daily training. When you consider all that she is and all that she does, that she is a valuable wife and that she is a vigorous worker, we want to notice finally one last important characteristic. Verses 28 through 31 speak to the fact that she is a virtuous woman. She can win Betty Crocker cook-offs. She can win Mother of the Year. She may preside over the PTA, but above all else, she is a godly woman. Verses 28 through 30 tell us that her walk is spiritual. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Proverbs ends where it begins. We look back in the first chapter of Proverbs, and we see that the fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And we see here at the end of the book that wisdom is again fearing the Lord, and she is someone who has sought to do that. Her desire is to follow the Lord and obey Him, to observe His commands and honor Him through all that she does and how she provides for her family. She has a love for the Lord that submits to His will and commits to His word. She finds time in her day to spend with the Lord so that her characteristics, His characteristics continue to be hers. Such godliness is recognized by her family as they praise her for all that she does and who she is. Even though she seeks no recognition, godly character is what drives her actions. And then finally, I want to notice in verse 31, not only is her walk spiritual, but her work is spectacular. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. She is a diligent worker that has inspired us, and we should rise up and reward her. It isn't just praise from her family. She's also recognized at the city gate. Again, something that was unheard of in that day, in that era, for a woman to be recognized at the city gate, to have that kind of respect. But that is the woman that is being modeled here for us. It's great when we find somebody of that kind of character, isn't it? And I would ask each of us to consider these quality traits. Someone who is a hard worker. Someone who is virtuous, that desires to be godly, to be obedient. Someone who will follow after the Lord. And I trust that today we will remember and pray for our moms that they might be it. But then we also need to aspire to be godly in our character and vigorous, and so that mutual respect and admiration can continue. Would you bow in prayer with me, please? How grateful we are, Father, for this passage. It is a rare thing to find a woman of such godly character. And whether woman or not here today, whether young or old, whether mother or not, I pray that we might each take from this passage a desire to be virtuous, a desire to be vigorous. I pray, Father, that we might aspire to have godly character traits, and that something here would resonate with us, and that we would go away changed, a desire to become more like You, so that we would gain a measure of respect because of our character, because of our conduct, because of our godliness. And so, in turn, to be able to give You the praise because You're the one that deserves it. Thank You for our moms. Thank You for all that they have done for us. I know for me, I could never begin to give my mom enough thanks or praise for all that she did for me. But I am grateful that it was into that family you placed me and that she was my mother. And I look forward to the day to be able to see her again and to thank her and to thank you. We give you praise because we have that hope. In Jesus' name.